When a sleep experiment controlled by a powerful government agency enlists the help of a young psychic to enter the dreams of others, obviously it's not going to go well. Fresh off of his SeaWorld adventure in Jaws 3D, Dennis Quaid leads an excellent cast in Dreamscape, a trippy, mind-bending, ambitious horror thriller that's much like the 2010 Christopher Nolan film Inception, except it was 26 years earlier and there's more snake men. It's a movie that feels like it would have been directed by David Cronenberg in an alternate universe, and I enjoyed every dreamy minute of it.
The box. You opened it. We came.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told it was nothing less.
Who are you?
Explorers in further regions of experience. Demons to some. Angels to others.
Call you Meatloaf?
Surprise, Sydney.
Come on, don't.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to How I Met Your Monster, the show where we discuss the introductions to your favorite movie monsters. I'm Zach Winsick.
And I'm Danny Salim.
And we are two filmmakers who love meeting monsters just as much as we love making them. Returning to the show today is special effects artist Casey Brewer. Welcome back, Casey.
Hi. I'm very excited to be here.
You sound it.
I was just really caught off guard because you said, I know that we will probably have a few other things to discuss before we start actually discussing the movie, but you said you enjoyed every minute of it?
No, I said I enjoyed every dreamy minute of it.
Okay, but does that mean that you liked it?
Oh, yeah. It was fucking awesome.
Danny?
It was a bit of a trip.
Okay.
I have a lot of good things to say about it.
Okay.
I have some things that you probably would not define as a good thing.
Okay.
I have 3 pages of notes and not one of them are bad.
Oh, really?
I have 1 page of notes and they're all confusing.
Yeah, mine too. Same.
I think it's just so good.
Okay, well.
Yeah, there's some cheesy stuff and the effects aren't great, but.
I like cheese. I love cheese.
But like, okay, how close to Inception was it?
I don't even remember Inception. I haven't seen Inception since it came out in the theater and I fell asleep.
I actually watched Inception a couple months ago. It's the same movie.
It is the same movie, minus the Snake Man.
Yeah, minus the Snake Man. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was going to play a Snake Man in Inception and then backed out last minute. You're like, I don't know. Let's not go there. In case another movie may have already done that.
So a quick shout out to my mother for recommending Dreamscape, because woohoo! When we were
thanks,
kids,
Stephanie.
when we were kids, she showed us this movie, and I didn't remember any of it except for the Snake Man.
And, so I have a question for you, Zach.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you were a kid, now we always talk about this, like the whole nostalgia thing, and I'm not trying to like shit on the movie by any means. Actually, it was fun. I didn't really have like. All right, I have thoughts about it, but I'm not going to say I had like a big problem with it. But what I will start off with is asking: when you were a kid watching this, did it scare you?
I don't remember. I'd have to ask my mother.
Gotcha. Because I could see this being one of those movies that I would have seen as a kid that would have like messed me up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the poster is very misleading. The poster is very Indiana Jones-ish.
Oh, yeah. I was actually waiting for that sort of thing to kick off.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be like a dream adventure. I thought it was going to be like him, the kid, the girl.
Yeah.
Everyone would like get together and go on like this adventure. I said the girl. Kate Capshaw.
Willie fucking Scott.
Yeah, what the fuck is wrong with me? Disrespect.
Don't what's the house about, son, giving me about. Anything goes.
This is Willie Scott. This is Indiana Jones, famous archaeologist.
Well, I thought archaeologists were always funny little men searching for their mommies.
Mummies.
But, yeah, so I was, I would say that my expectations were just a little let down.
Okay.
But then once I kind of, like, figured out, like, what kind of movie it was, I was like, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Reassess.
And see, I was kind of the opposite way because I had only remembered the Snake Man. And so I thought, like, he was, like, the big monster villain. Like, that was, like, the whole thing. And so when it went, like, deeper than that, I was really, I was excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I, yeah, I had,
and Casey, you just, you weren't into it.
I fucking hated it.
Oh no.
So, I didn't look at anything about it before. Right. Okay. So I didn't know anything about it. I didn't look at pictures. I didn't like watch trailer or do anything. I just played the movie. Worth an hour and a half of my life that I will never get back.
It is given to the dreamscape.
Yeah.
It is. You sacrificed an hour and a half to the dreamscape.
Yeah.
This two big saving graces for me were definitely the cast. I thought Dennis Quaid was really good. Kate Capshaw, again, just always wonderful. But then also seeing Christopher Plummer and Max von Sydow just like, you know, verbally duking it out was, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, they were really good.
Like they
everybody
were,
was good.
Yeah, even no one
kid,
was like really.
Even the kid was good.
The kid was the best, actually.
Yeah.
Little buddy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I thought like, you know, going back to like the poster, I thought he was like, he played like an important part in the movie, but I thought he was going to continue. It was just like, once that part ended, he was just out of it. Like you said, Danny, I was waiting for them to like all go on a.
Yeah, quest. I thought there was going to be a whole come together moment, but
yeah,
the ending was a little. Well, I don't want to turn it. I don't want to criticize it too much, and like, because I didn't really watch it with that. Yeah, Casey will. Casey's just gonna. I'm gonna text Casey. She's gonna say what I'm thinking if she agrees. She's like, yeah. I mean,
the only thing I think I would criticize is the opening credits, because it was like boring credits, boring credits. Oh, here's the cool opening. All right, we're getting into it.
Back
boring to credits, boring credits.
Well,
boring
what's credits. Funny you bring that up because when I was watching it, something happened. I told you I was having some issues with my headphones, and the sound went out. Like it just cut off. So I was like, why is there no music over these credits? Even when it said Dreamscape, I was like, that's such a choice. I was like, oh, you just need like a little something. And then I obviously realized when everyone was talking and no words are coming out.
Yeah. Like, and one of the worst things about the movie was the music. It was
the music
terrible.
Was a choice.
It was jarring. Choice. It wasn't like suspenseful or even fun. It was just like, it was making my head pound and I couldn't focus on anything else except in the beginning, he's like playing his little beep, 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 saxophone. Right. Yeah. And then after he plays the saxophone, it starts playing the song that he was playing. And I was like, oh that's kind of cool. And then after that, it just nothing.
I wouldn't
was the
have
same.
Minded some saxophone in the movie. I mean, they set it up. You may as well pay it off.
Right.
Because it was a lot of like ding, 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 ding.
Just
ding,
a lot
ding,
of really ding, heavy, ding. Sharp synth.
Yeah.
There was a thing on IMDb about the music. I don't even remember.
I hope that
the music.
They never got. I hope that they never got work again. Whoever it was.
It was John Williams.
So okay, the music. So originally, the producers wanted Maurice Jarre, J-A-R-R-E, to write the music for the film Orchestrally. How do you say that?
Orchestrally.
Orchestrally.
Orchestrally. But Jarre insisted on scoring the film electronically because he felt that it was the right approach for the material and also set the tone for the film.
He's like, you know when you're dreaming and all you hear is synth banging around in your head?
All wrong.
So he went on to, after Dreamscape, what was that? We got a new subscriber, everybody.
It's
that composer. His ear was ringing. He was like,
Okay, so he did like, he's been doing music for like 20 or 30 years before Dreamscape. But he did Witness with Harrison Ford. Okay. He did Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Damn.
He did Dennis Quaid's next movie, which is Enemy Mine.
I never saw that.
Oh, that was, I used to watch that one as a kid. That's a good one. He did The Mosquito Coast, Fatal Attraction.
You know what's funny is you're mentioning all these Harrison Ford movies, or at least two. Mm-hmm. And I made a note that Dennis Quaid sounds a lot like a young Harrison Ford in this movie.
Interesting.
I actually kind of, like, not really confused the two, but for a moment, like, when I first started watching it, I was like, oh, Dennis Quaid. They already did a Dennis Quaid movie. And then I was like, no, he's not in What Lies Beneath. Never mind.
Kate Capshaw was on set. She's just talking to him. She's like, oh, Temple of Doom, am I right? And he's like, she's like, oh, sorry, I thought you were someone else. Had that even come out yet, actually?
Yeah. 86.
So no.
Temple of Doom. Well, yes.
Oh, wait, no, it says 84.
84 because it was PG, and because of that, and everybody walked out. That's Steven Spielberg had the PG-13 idea because of Temple of Doom. Hmm. Yeah. Oh, and Dan, I do have a Scream reference, which we'll get to later.
So. Oh, I do too. I do too.
It's probably actually, the same one.
Actually, technically had two.
Oh, damn. Okay.
But the second one was stupid.
Oh. <So. laughs> Okay, so I was kind of stoned while watching this, and I had some, like, deep insight. I wrote, opening, ... Whoa, nuke!
So it's funny. All right, so now you bring up the opening. That was another moment that, like, kind of threw off my expectations about what the tone and, like, feeling of this movie would be, because mm-hmm. it is kind of, like, yeah, okay, you can like kind of argue that it was just kind of like slightly crappy, dated 80s effects. But I was like, or it's a choice and it's supposed to look sort of like dreamy and weird. And is that what this whole movie's going to be?
I don't even remember it.
It wasn't. It was like the woman running.
Oh, yes, that's right. Like, in the dream.
John.
Right, yeah. In the president's dream. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The nightmare scenes and the dream scenes, just like you said, I think they were a choice to like, I mean, yeah, the effects are like dated and it would probably be different. All right. While we're talking about this, I'm going to bring this up right now. Dreamscape is the perfect candidate for a remake.
Oh, totally.
Sure.
Because it's because the story's really cool, right?
The story is cool.
But the effects and things could be updated. And so I think it's the perfect combination.
Yeah, but
elements for a remake.
But when movies have, like, think
carefully
of
what you're saying, Casey.
Think of any 80s horror movie that has shitty effects and a good story. They remake it and it's terrible.
Yeah. I think the only way they could get around.
So what you're trying to say is this movie is actually not good and they should remake it.
No. That's not what I'm saying.
If they did,
why? Remember the Nightmare on Elm Street remake?
Okay, so, but,
Only movie that...
I was going to say, but Nightmare on Elm Street's a good movie.
That's what I'm saying. And that was the only movie that I have ever left in the middle of.
Oh mm-hmm. my God, that's so funny.
I left in Envy with Jack Black and Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
Is that the one
I left also, in the middle of that?
I left Night at the Museum, but that was because I had to be somewhere.
Well, that doesn't count.
The movie was fine.
I think if they remade Dreamscape, it would, because Inception exists, I think they would have to do it more like a kid, very like, not like a kid's movie, like watered down or anything, just like a little centered closer to kids, and then kind of embrace the whole like, go the Inception route where like everyone goes into the dream together. Otherwise, it's just sort of like these kind of like vignettes of just like, we're going into a dream, we're coming out of a dream. Going in, we're coming out. And it's always like just one character doing it. And
Yeah.
That got a little repetitive for me. So I think if you could like kind of just stick to that for the, like, even just like half the second half of the movie, just like a huge, big, creepy adventure, that could be fun.
Well, I mean, you see a lot of references, not references, I guess a lot of similarities between this and Dream Warriors.
Totally.
Which Chuck Russell wrote this, and then 4 years later, or however many, 2 years later.
87, 4, 5, 6, 3.
3 years later, he would write and direct Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. So you see a lot of those elements in this where, which I guess it kind of brings back to your point, brings me back to your point, where it's like the ending of Dream Warriors is kind of like all of them in the dream together.
Oh, that's a good point.
Which would be a cool ending.
So he had time to think about it.
Like they were setting that up. Yeah, exactly.
Which, I mean, kinda with got the to president, he kind of was in the dream together.
That's another thing, though, is like I got a little, there was a lot going on. Like it was like a whole thing about the president, and then it was about, I don't know. I mean, I get it.
I think you were overthinking it.
I will say one thing. I definitely was overthinking it. One big thing that disappointed me was it was not nearly as scary as I was hoping it would be. I thought it would be much more horror. And the tone it had was fun. Like, I kind of like those movies. But yeah, it left a little bit to be desired in the horror front.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Well, it, to me, like I mentioned in the intro, it felt to me like David Cronenberg could have directed this, and it would have been a cool, because there was all the trippy dream stuff, and then there was like the political theme and story that went through the rest of it. And
yeah, I think it perfect. That's the thing. It did feel a little bit in the middle where, like, I feel like it would have benefited from committing to one tone over the other. Where if it was a little more kid friendly, or if it was just like really dark and weird, and, you know, like Cronenberg's great with that sort of stuff, you know, like fucking with your mind and like politics and, you know, corruption and, you know, getting like literally like going into someone's like brain and thought process and all that. So it kind of felt like they kept like, they would like give you it and then pull it back. And then like, you weren't quite, it wasn't, so it was like hard to be super satisfied personally. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Man, you guys are so negative.
I'm so actually negative. Very positive. In fact, I'm positive that I hate this movie. So really quick sidebar. Zach had discussed watching Society. Danny, did you watch it?
Oh, no, I still haven't.
Oh, my
God. I'm waiting until.
Oh, it's so good.
If Zach, if you ever want to do that movie, I'll watch it for that. But I think I need a reason. Or I need to, like, be with people. You know what I mean? And I need to be, like, in a party setting watching that kind of movie.
It was best alone for me.
Maybe we need to do a Society bonus episode.
Oh, it was so much fun.
So, okay, Casey, we clearly are on different tracks here. Because Society is such a bad movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You get to the end, like, the last 20, 30 minutes.
And it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
But up until then, I would be like, how did this get made? Like, who wrote this?
I mean,
it doesn't make any sense.
So my favorite part was probably when she offered the guy tea and she said, how do you take your tea? Cream? Sugar? Would you like me to pee in it?
Okay, that's it. It's settled. We're doing a Society bonus episode.
So good.
What is this movie?
Yeah. Sorry, it was great. And then also, I'm sorry. I'm sidetracked now talking about other movies because I'm sorry. Sorry, I don't care about this one. Have either of you watched The Wailing?
No, but I have that saved on, I think, on Shudder.
So funny good. You said that. So good. Well, here's the thing. I just got COVID.
Oh
yeah, and I forgot you told me that. What the hell's happening? Are you okay?
I'm fine. Like, I'm fully vaccinated. I got COVID. It felt just like a heavy cold. Mm-hmm. Like I was a little achy and whatnot for like a day. And then I just felt like crappy. You know, it was nothing that I hadn't experienced before.
Yeah.
But for those listening, I think that was 100% because I am vaccinated. Yeah. Okay, moving
get
on.
The shot.
Get the shot. But I watched a bunch of movies, and one of them, because I had always wanted to watch it, was The Wailing.
Oh.
And it was really, really good.
So good. So
because
good.
Like there was a lot of like little humor elements throughout like the first half, and then it got like really serious towards the end.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
But yeah, guys, I don't watch movies. I just save them in my queues on all the other on all the platforms that I use. And I tell people, "Oh yeah, I'm going to watch that. I'm going to watch that."
Oh yeah, it's good because you think, you know, it's one of those ones where you're like,
"Oh, I thought I had it all figured out."
You don't know who to trust kind of thing, and it's like who's playing who and it's good. It's good.
Sorry, Danny.
I'll just sit here and just listen. This is great.
Anyway, back to this other movie.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So for Dreamscape, sorry, I don't know. Before you go, really quick, I just want this on the record. Casey hates it. You love it. I'm definitely in the middle.
So this is the Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of this movie is the three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, there was a point I started to say like 10 minutes ago. The dream sequences in these movies, well, just in movies in general, I love dream sequences. 8.5, the classic dream art house film, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one did dreams really well, where you're kind of just like, each scene, you just like go into something else.
Yeah, like disoriented.
Yeah, and the first time out of 8.5, Dreamscape, and Mother.
Oh.
Mother was the first one that I had seen out of the three of those. I mean, that I remember. I saw Dreamscape when I was a kid. But the ending of Mother, without giving anything away, is like a nightmare. And they do it so well.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that movie definitely freaked me out. Yeah.
Like, you just like, every turn, every time the camera moves, you're like in a different place. And that, I thought that was just awesome.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, they did that really well in this too, especially with like that long staircase.
Oh, I was just going to say my favorite part was the staircase.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that scene would have been really great if it wasn't for the music.
It's
true. Not like I could not even focus on it, but it was cool. I mean, the set of that scene with like everything was. All of the lines were slanted. Like there wasn't a single line that was like straight in that whole thing. And then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big windows that are like all oblong and crooked. Mm-hmm. And
it felt kind of like Susie to me.
Yeah. And if you were going to, you know, if the whole like reason why they use that kind of music was to be disorienting, you could have done like Zach, if they had gone the instrumental route, you know, like plucking some strings, you know, like playing the, you know, violin or something, like getting like all weird like that, you know, the Pandarecki and the Shining and all that.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah, that would have been much
more
effective.
It just didn't fit. It was like, I could never like fall into the movie because I kept getting distracted. Either, like I said, I'm getting repetitive, but like either my expectations were off or like the tone was just like not clicking for me.
I don't even remember the music.
Well, you're lucky.
I cannot.
Zach, I just bought you the soundtrack, so clearly you didn't listen to my gift. Awesome.
But okay, I'll be negative for a second. I'll be the negative
yes.
one for a second.
Join us.
Join us.
I am so sick of like the violin plucking.
Bing, bing,
in like, bing, in like.
Well, were you sick of it in 1984?
No, I'm just saying now. It's like every like it's like, blink, blink,
bing. I like it. I still like it. I would have violin plucking over disorienting synth any day.
Okay. So when Dennis Quaid, okay, this is my deep thought with Zach Winsick.
Okay.
When Dennis Quaid is in the, those guys grab him and they're like, he's like, am I being kidnapped? Whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
he said, answer me one thing. And he said, am I in danger? And I just thought, like, I said, what a solid question.
Mm.
Because that's just like, okay, I was under the influence, but what a solid question. Because you have to be like, okay, whatever's happening, I don't know what's happening, but the main thing that I need to worry about, am I in any kind of danger? Do I need to be worried? And so that it just covers like everything.
But he didn't know those people. You have to trust those people. He doesn't know them.
Well, yeah, but
if your mom kidnaps you, you can ask her. You trust your mom to tell you the truth.
What I do like, though,
why would my mom kidnap me?
What I do like about that line, though, is that it reminded me of when you just said that. It reminds me of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And no spoilers, but when there's a scene when the character's like, more people would rather be like polite than, you know, accept the fact that they're in a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in that scene, it kind of like, because you do, you kind of like throw people off. You know, at the end of the day, we're all human. So it's like, if you ask your kidnapper if they're actually going to hurt you, like you kind of see them get like, so I agree. I can see where you're coming from with that. For this podcast, are we in danger?
I don't know if I can answer that just yet.
Wait, that's not a good sign.
We'll have to see if we get to page 2 of my notes.
Oh, gosh.
I failed to write the whole line down, and now I'm kicking myself. But I think I'm going to paraphrase Dennis Quaid, and I'm going to say, I'm going to vote for line of the movie, Dennis Quaid's character saying, so what you do here is count boners?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's not paraphrasing. That's exactly what he said.
I was going to write that down. I was like, is there a whole scene about boners?
We could only hope. Just
talking about them? Yeah. You're making Kate very uncomfortable right now. Oh, I have, we'll get to that later, but I have some thoughts on Dennis Quaid's character at a certain point in this movie that I did not appreciate, but we'll cross that bridge.
Oh, I already know.
Like when he dream rapes.
When he dream rapes her. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Spoiler alert for who I nominate for the real monster of this movie. It's him during that scene. That's horrible.
He got really creepy, really fast.
Yeah.
Like he sat in that seat and he just like stared at her in like the dark.
He also like the whole time, every time he's with her, he's like sexualizing her.
Actually, they sexualized him in this movie. I didn't want to see that.
Wait, like, when?
What do you mean? He was walking around in his underwear for a good chunk of this movie.
Yeah. When
and I, every time scene, I'm like, what are they doing?
There was that one scene that was, and I guess if you're like, compared to like guys in the locker room, it's like whatever, or anyone in a locker room for that matter. But when the guy's in his room and he's like playing a saxophone and Dennis Quaid's like walking around in his towel and he keeps like almost putting his underwear on. And I'm like, stop. Like, either commit to it or put the underwear down.
They're teasing you, but so not awkward. In the right way.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dennis Quaid's character is in the... This episode has, like, no structure.
Nope. Not at all. I can't...
But, that's not our fault. Just it's because
like
the monster...
the movie.
The monster technically doesn't show up until the end. I literally, yeah. I have like my list and I'm like, monster intro. And I would, every time I would see someone who is suspicious, I'd write their name down with a question mark. And then I would go back and be like, okay, so he was the monster technically, but we didn't really know that until about like hour and, you know, 20 minutes in.
20 minutes, yeah.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. The first time we see Christopher Plummer, I was like, he's the monster.
Yeah.
I got that feeling. Just, I don't know. He was like sitting in the shadows and that, and which they could have been doing that to mislead you, but I was like, he's the monster.
I thought it was Max von Sydow. And then
is that the Warriors guy?
No, that's what is it? I know his character's name, but I always forget his real name. Tom.
I don't know, but I liked him because he was creepy.
Yeah, so. And then I was like, okay, then he's the monster. And then toward the end of the movie, I was like, oh, is Kate Capshaw in on this? So I thought she was a monster. Ooh. But then when they showed that, spoiler alert, Max von Sydow was dead, I was like, okay, well, they're not gonna have Dennis Quaid as like the sole like hero. He needs like a counterpart. So
I thought that, like the snake guy, I thought that there were going to be like actual monsters.
Mm. Yeah.
So
Tommy, speaking of Tommy, according to IMDb, Kevin Costner was offered that role.
Oh,
weird.
Yeah,
which would have been terrible.
Yeah,
I love Kevin Costner, but he did that. He's was not
too.
Role
he,
for him.
He would like downplay it too much. That needs to be a little more. Because even this actor kind of downplayed it, but he's already kind of always serving up a little bit, so it felt mm-hmm. a little, you know, weird and creepy.
Well, because he came on and I was like, I know this guy. Yeah. I was like, where do I know this guy? And
Warriors.
But the thing that I was thinking of was Twin Peaks.
He wasn't. Who was he in Twin Peaks?
He was like in the first season of Twin Peaks. I've never seen season two, but in the first season, he had a big role. He was like the bad guy's son.
Why? Oh, I don't remember.
The first time you see him, he's like coming back with like this big sandwich. And he brought a sandwich for like everybody.
Well, how can you be a bad guy if you're giving sandwiches to people?
Yeah.
Okay. So Dennis Quaid's character, Alex, is in the university experiment place. Mm-hmm. And what's Max von Sydow's character? Paul?
I didn't write it down. He was Dr. something.
Oh, wait.
I think it's Paul.
I know the other guy's Bob.
Is he the one that reminded me of, is it Charlie? He reminded me of the gas man from Dumb and Dumber.
No.
How do they know that I got gas? Oh, not him? Okay.
I think I know what you're talking about, but...
See, I didn't write much down for this.
His character's name was... Yeah, Paul.
Oh.
Paul Novotny.
Oh, Novotny.
Novotny. But, Casey, you'll appreciate this. I'm watching this movie with Nina, and Paul Novotny... does this thing where he says, "You see, Alex, we've done it 3 times." And Nina said, "That's a very Jack Black thing to say."
Yes. Aww.
Like, aww. I could see Jack Black saying that.
Oh, yeah.
Like as Nacho Libre.
Oh, my gosh. Would, you know
if
how,
they did.
Do you know how often I quote Nacho Libre? Every day. Every day. Seriously. Because at work, somebody gets nachos, and I have to scream, "Nacho!" And nobody has a clue what I'm doing. They just think that I'm excited about making nachos. But I'm not. I don't want to make the nachos.
Yeah. Look, we quote it, like, Nina, I saw it once a while ago, and Nina introduced it to me again. And it's funnier when, like, you watch it with someone who loves it, and then it's like, you get things. So, like, I love when the guy goes, "Get off of me!"
I love everything about that movie. Everything.
I've only seen it once. It was my last class ever, senior year in high school. My friend Eric and I were like, "We don't have to go back to school ever again. What do you want to do? Nacho Libre just came out. You want to go see it?"
Oh, yeah.
We saw it at like 11:30 in the morning.
Oh, it's so funny. It is so funny.
Dan, yeah, you need to see it again. It's funny.
Every day. Everything like, that you just said is my favorite thing to do. Every day.
You guys will be happy to know that we are on my second page of notes, and it starts out with a conspiracy theory.
Oh, good lord.
Great.
Wait, the movie conspiracy theory? Are you just going to talk about Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts?
I love that movie. It's so good. Who here has seen Heavyweights?
Oh, me.
Yes.
I think everyone has.
Yeah, like, so good, right?
Everyone.
So the main character, Dennis Quaid's character in this movie is named Alex Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
For a while watching this movie, I was thinking that was the same name of the character in Heavyweights.
Was it?
No.
Okay, so nothing about this conspiracy theory is accurate.
His name is Gerald Gardner.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
They call him Jerry.
And so, Gerald is Latin for Alex.
Oh, he's the counselor, right? Jerry?
No, he's the kid.
Oh.
That goes to the camp.
Okay, I thought that it was the counselor guy, but go ahead.
Well, it's... What's his name?
Oh, yeah, I thought his name was Jerry.
That's what I just said.
I thought it was Jerry.
You gotta fix this.
Hold on. Because he says, Gerald Gardner, son of Maury Gardner.
Who, Ben Stiller?
Yeah. Oh no, the counselor's the name German. Is Pat Finley.
Pat
oh,
Finley. Pat okay. Finley.
That's yeah. right. Who's Jerry?
Jerry, he's the kid.
He's the kid.
But I feel like there's another, I don't think of a different movie.
He's like the main kid.
No, I get it now.
Who's like, they call him Captain because he like gets the wings from the airline lady.
God, I love that movie.
But okay, so his dad, Jeffrey Tambor, is Maury Gardner. Anyways, there's a connection there. I know there is. They might have, Alex Gardner and Maury Gardner might have been brothers.
I thought you had something, and I was like, oh, he's just. Oh.
I wanted to have something, but the steel worker dream.
Yeah.
Do you guys know anything about Larry Cohen?
A little bit.
That scene reminded me very much of Q. The Winged Serpent.
Mm.
Did you get that feeling too?
Yeah. Now that where you they're say
like, it was like, it was cool, like the way they shot it and did all that stuff. But I was like, oh, this feels very much like Q.
Mm-hmm. A lot of green screen hanging from tall buildings and
yeah,
falling.
Yeah. And...
All I wrote next to my notes was so fucking corny.
It was intense. I was like, is he going to rip the shirt or not? Is he going to rip the shirt? Is he
it was fall? A bit of a twist where Dennis Quaid fell. And I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yes, I didn't see that either.
I was getting frustrated watching it, though, because it kind of like set up that the other guy would fall. And I was like, okay, even if he rips your shirt, you're still holding on. Like, just don't let go just because your shirt rips. And yeah. You're fine.
Like his shirt, he rips his shirt, the guy's going to automatically like, let go.
So at least I was like, okay, at least Dennis fell.
So one thing you had mentioned earlier that you weren't scared and you wish it was more of a horror element. Yeah. One thing that really got me was this first, I guess not the first dream, but the dream with the kids in the, with
oh the yeah, voices. I wrote that down.
And then they like come out of the closet and they're all burned and
they're like,
oh, that's the nuked people.
Yeah.
That was freaky.
Yeah, it was, but it was only like 3 seconds.
So that brings us to the point in the movie where I think it's time to meet our monster.
Buddy. Buddy, what are you doing?
Are you the babysitter, Alex?
Yeah, I'm the babysitter.
Because most of the time they just leave you here.
You don't have to be afraid.
You know the snake man?
The who?
The snake man.
The snake man? What do you mean, like the boogeyman?
He's outside and he wants someone to get me. For Snake Man.
Oh, hey. I'm not going to let him get you.
Are you sure, Alex? He's always there.
The fucking Snake Man.
Hmm.
Right?
What scared me initially about the Snake Man was I thought the effects, I thought the, like, the look of it was effective. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally a Snake Man.
Yeah,
but when Dennis Quaid is talking to the kid and the kid's like, the Snake Man's outside. I don't know why, but like just like this kid saying it and like that visual I had in my head really freaked me out. And then when we get the actual like the first little glimpse of it when he smashes his hand through the window, I was like, that was creepy.
Yeah,
like,
it was neat.
That got me.
It's like almost like you hear Snake Man and you don't expect to see a hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was more like a salamander, but that's okay. The part that I really liked about that scene was actually how the dad was just sitting at the table, and he's like, is that your dad? And he's like, he's not going to do anything, and then he says something, he yells at them and calls them bastards, and then the Snake Man just obliterates him. But
oh, that was a cool kill, even
though
it was
off screen. Because you saw it, you saw it as a shadow, which I thought was really cool.
Love that.
And that might be the only thing I say is cool about this movie.
Well, as a someone who works in like makeup effects and all that, what are your thoughts on the actual design of the Snake Man? And
well, like I said, he should have been called Salamander Man. But no, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, it was fine. I mean, for 1984, I mean, honestly, if you kind of remember, the last one that we did was The Thing, which was in 1982. Mm. And you can see, you know, how much better that was, but that's okay.
Where they
I mean, as regular effects go for 1984, I mean, it wasn't, like you said, it kind of, it did what it was supposed to do.
Served its purpose.
Yeah. But there wasn't, I mean, other than that, I feel like there wasn't even any effect stuff in it.
But there was a little bit of a kind of a, an early Freddy Krueger reference, even though Freddy Krueger didn't exist yet.
Ooh, do tell. I missed
when,
that.
When Tommy is on the train later and oh, literally has like knives on his fingers.
Oh, yeah.
And then later he looks all like melted because he was like a nuke victim. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And they had like, the
wow,
the
that's
other,
very on the nose.
The other
so
nuke victims too make up. But.
Speaking of that, that's true, another IMDb trivia. Kate Capshaw starred as the love interest in not one, but two 1984 movies that featured a scene where a man's still beating heart was ripped from his chest.
Oh, that's so cool.
Wait.
Isn't that crazy?
What's the other
that's
one?
Wild.
Temple of Doom. Are you kidding me?
Oh, sorry.
Bali Mangdi Kali Ma. Mukti Degi Kali Ma. Kali Ma. Kali Ma. Kali Ma Shakti De. Bali
Well, I thought this is stupid, but I was thinking again of Dumb and Dumber because for some reason I can't, even though that was made in like 1996, it's cool. It's cool.
In a weird way, Casey just like thinks this movie's dumb, so everything's like referencing Dumb and Dumber, but it actually like ties into it pretty
deeply. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry.
It's just very convenient.
Because I just pictured, you know, Lloyd Christmas ripping that guy's heart out, putting it in the doggy bag. I'm sorry.
Doggy.
That's great.
Yeah, but that's right. Yeah, the claws come out of his hand. Just little, little guys.
Yeah, they're little nails. They're not claws. They're nails.
Well, even we're jumping ahead a little bit, but even later when he's in the, he's like, did you ever watch Bruce Lee movies? I watched Enter the Dragon 6 times, and he's got like that swoopy
like lightsaber
mace thing.
Were they
which
nunchucks?
Is very Dream Warriors.
Were they nunchucks?
So.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think they were.
I was going to mention this earlier. I thought that was actually very, I mean, it is very Dream Warriors, but it's also a little Dream Master when that whole like martial arts scene when he's fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was funny. Yeah, a lot of Freddy, which I guess is
speaking
inevitable.
Of Dream Master, this is a perfect opportunity for me to put Dramarama's anything in this episode.
I can't think of the song off the top of my head. But I'm going to assume that it's playing and you're going to cut me saying this. So I'm going to be like, great song. Just keep that soundbite. Great song.
Great song.
I love this song.
So right off the bat, in the first time we see the Snake Man, our monster, they kill him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the kid does. He gets a hold of little Denny there. And
that's a good point.
And then Buddy kills him. Denny. Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
I just call him Q, so.
So they do kill the monster right off the bat. And when he comes out of the dream and they're all like excited and he says, we did it. We stopped the monster. And the kid's like, thank you, Denny. You did it. The look in Kate Capshaw's eyes. I swear she had a small orgasm when she was watching him in that room.
That's terrifying.
That wasn't in my notes. I don't know.
It was in mine. I said that look in her eyes. She had an orgasm.
That was actually my only note that I took for this. It's like orgasm. I wrote boner and then orgasm with a question mark.
Was this before or after the dream rape sequence though?
Oh, it was before.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Good no. Lord.
Yeah.
Then he ruined that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
That took me out. Like, that was just so uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. But right before that scene, I have my first Scream reference.
Okay.
You said you have two. I just have one.
I have one, and the second one is weak, but I'm still going to throw it down.
Well, it's Norm's book.
Stab. It's
Norm's book, Stab.
Yes. I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
I was paying so little attention.
And I was like, we haven't talked about Scream on this podcast for like 5 episodes, so we got to do this.
Thank you.
We finally come to Dennis Quaid's moment of shame.
Eesh.
Yeah, so Dennis Quaid's moment of shame, he got super creepy super fast.
Yeah.
Such
an odd choice. I mean,
was it an
the fact
choice?
That her character says later, like, you shouldn't do that, that's wrong, which means the writer knew that.
Oh.
But still felt comfortable enough to just, like, write it into the movie as a sensual scene. Like, it's not like there's a moment where he's like, oh, like, he's doubting it. Like, what am I doing? Like, oh, okay, no, I'm not going to do it. It's just he's committed to it. It's really creepy.
If you think about in 1984, though. And this isn't a defense for this because it's still not right. But
no, yeah,
she didn't,
I know what you mean, though.
She didn't say no in her dream. She didn't say no. And back then, it has evolved a lot into what rape truly is now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like how. Yeah. And so I'm pretty sure that's probably one of the things. Well, she didn't say no in her dream. So.
And yeah, I guess if someone were to argue against it, they could say that she did kind of open up to him about having feelings for him, but that still like doesn't
right and yeah it's from not 20 in 2021 it's if you didn't say yes it's no, you know.
And what's worse is then later when they're talking about it, he kind of like makes her feel weird about it, where he's like, well, I didn't realize, and she's like, I know, and he's like, poor me. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. It's like, I didn't realize. It's like, okay, good Lord. Like, you're not the good guy in this moment. Let her just be mad at you, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Oh, Denny.
Oh, Denny. Denny Q.
So the pep rally scene was pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. And that's my Scream 2 reference.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I thought it was kind of funny that there was a pep rally in the middle of the night.
Like, it wasn't out of place, but
it's so funny because it almost seems like in the script it was probably like envisioned as like there's a big game going on and like there's so many people and like like there's traffic and this and like you can't even get through it and like no one is paying attention to anyone, but it's like this line of students at like 10 o'clock at night in full like, you know, like cheerleading outfits and, you know, wearing their like jerseys and everything, and it seems so busy, but like only close up, like from like the wide shots, it's just this like little row of people. And the reason why it reminded me of Scream was because it's like when Maureen's killed in the opening scene of Scream 2, when it's like no one even notices she's getting killed because there's just so much energy and everyone's screaming. But it really doesn't, it doesn't work as well as it wants to work, because anyone could have just been like, did that guy just get shot? Who are these guys in suits? Guys, we all know each other except for these 5 dudes screaming at each other. Like, can we just take a second?
Is this the part when the gas man from Dumb and Dumber gets shot?
Yes, George Went gets in the chest.
Wait, I know it's not.
Norm the gas man from Dumb and Dumber?
I know that he's not really, but the first thing I thought of when I saw him was, how did they know that I got gas?
George Wendt could never be evil.
Guys.
I'm sorry. And I don't remember the pep rally. Can you believe it? Can you believe that I don't remember that part?
I mean, yeah.
But you love this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, so speaking of campus and speaking of pep rallies and speaking of Dennis Quaid and speaking of choices, did anyone else notice that Dennis Quaid is always running on campus?
Well, I can't think of one Dennis Quaid movie except Inner Space for some reason.
No, not and in every movie. And he's definitely not
running.
I was like,
just in this movie. Alex Gardner never walks on campus.
That's funny. I did not notice that.
Well, I guess unless he's in a crowded pep rally, but every time you see him, he's running.
He's trying to get away from this fucking awful movie.
And Nina made a good point. When he runs and he's like jogging and he sits down next to Kate Capshaw on the bench, why is he sitting so close? He's like sweaty and gross and she doesn't seem to care.
Because guys in the 80s just like, I mean, or guys now, I guess, they don't have enough self-awareness sometimes. They just think they're hot shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably true.
Zach, did Nina like this movie?
Yeah.
You sure?
I think so.
Zach, I don't want to ruin your memories of this movie.
No, I think we had pretty similar thoughts about this movie.
Okay, good.
Like, it was, there's definitely room for improvement, but overall it was like a cool movie.
I also think it was a great recommendation from your mom, because it obviously opened up a lot of discussion. We have a lot to say.
I mean, and honestly, I still don't think that I would have liked the movie, but I've been super, super indecisive lately as far as like what to watch and like stuff like that. So I've just been watching a lot of Forged in Fire because it's
I started watching
mindless.
That.
It's amazing, but I like that I don't have to like actually pay attention to it. I can be doing other things and not.
Yeah. I feel like I just watched the gay version of that on HBO, which is
the flower one, right?
All that glitters is gold.
Oh.
It's so good though. They just make jewelry.
Oh, that's
cool. There's one guy who like he seems like he's forging.
Oh, okay.
But
well, I watched like, I think I might've seen two episodes of that show, but some of them suck.
Forged in Fire?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You'd think they would be better to like be on that show.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, think about even cooking in a different kitchen, how hard it is.
Yeah.
Right? Because you don't know where things are. You're not familiar with stuff. So
what is the show about?
Oh, they forge knives in the first round. In the second round, they put handles on them. And then
so it's not like survival and they have to like forge.
No, it's just making good knives, like quality knives and stuff like that.
And they just like make them and then they're like, I'm going to throw this at the wall. If it breaks, you lose.
Yeah.
If it sticks in the wall, you move on.
Well, kind of.
Gotcha.
Just whoever makes the best ones progress. And then the last round, two people get to go home to their home forge and they have 4 to 5 days to make like, you know, cooler weapons or like a cooler weapon. Yeah.
They should do a Halloween episode where they have to do weapons for like Jason and Freddy and like,
they recently had
finger gloves.
They recently did have an episode that was kind of like horror movies. Like one of like the first round was like a slashing knife, like kind of thing, whatever. I don't remember what the final round ended up being. That was actually the first episode of the show that I watched because somebody suggested it to me. And now I'm like into season 6 already.
Oh damn.
And that was like 3 weeks ago.
Speaking of reality shows, has anyone seen the Boulay Brothers Dracula?
No.
I started watching one of their specials, but then I didn't finish.
No, but I mean, I love Drag Race, so.
I love Drag Race.
Yeah.
Do you watch All Stars?
So this season I've only watched, spoiler alert, I think it was episode 2 when Silky went home. That's all that I've watched so far, but
Silky Ganache, R.I.P.
If you guys like Drag Race and you like horror, you'll love Dragula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been looking at it. So
I've only watched season 2, episode 1, and It was pretty cool. But like at the end, the people who are the last ones to be like voted off or whatever, they like fucking tortured them. They're like, we're going to stick a bunch of needles in you. Like, oh piercings. My God. And they're like, whoever can last the longest gets to stay. Oh, and I was like, holy shit, this just got real.
That's intense, huh?
But like their first like
challenge,
not goal, challenge, yeah, was to make like a Cenobite character.
Oh, that's cool.
Focused on like their style of drag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very neat.
And some of them were, some of them weren't good, but some of them were crazy good.
Yeah.
Where can I watch?
I did not agree with the judges. They like said some people were bad, and I'm like, what are you talking about? That's the best one.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
But you can watch it on Netflix. But that's why I started with season two, because that's the first season that's on Netflix.
Gotcha.
Is season two. They don't have season one.
Side note again, sorry, now we're talking about Drag Race. But I actually in June with my boyfriend and my brother and his fiance, we actually went and saw the Drive and Drag tour that had like Gottmik and Rosé. And Rosé is my favorite. I'm obsessed with Rosé.
I love
her so
Rosé.
Much.
I really warmed up to her.
I know in the beginning. Season. Yeah. In the beginning, like, she wasn't.
I was like, oh, she's just a badass. She just like works really hard.
Yeah. Just... But she's so great.
Casey, it's so cool to me that Cody came out as bi.
Oh yeah.
That was awesome. Brother. I had like, yeah. He's I'll tell you, he's a fan of the show.
Oh,
he's a fan of the show.
Yeah. He's my brother. I'm very, very proud of him. And, so is, I mean, everybody else, his fiance is very proud.
We love
of
you, Cody.
Very supportive.
That's awesome. Yes. Cody. Hello. Thank you for listening and congratulations.
This is a very safe space. It's the show is half gay at least.
I mean, yes, because I'm bisexual too. Zach is straight, so,
So it is
right. Ooh, well, right now, than... right now, yes, this episode.
Yeah, it's even split.
That's right.
Yeah, we are way off track. Let's bring it back to
Snake Man.
Snake Man. I think the last thing
Snake Man.
I think the last thing we talked about was Dennis Quaid being creepy, but. Okay, speaking of monsters, since this is a monster podcast, the subway scene was really cool.
yeah when
with all oh, like the I new like victims
that. Yeah, that was
and they
cool.
were like zombie kind of.
I don't remember.
Are you serious,
I'm
Casey
serious.
What were you doing?
I don't know. I just gave up. I just hated it.
Oh, I know. I'm trying not to like be so critical, and but it did that second half of the movie felt so stop and go with the dream world and the reality that I like it kind of like lost the momentum. Like I wish it built up to that and that I was on this journey with them in this dream worlds. But from a non-critical like point of view, it was cool. I will say that.
It was cool.
Man, I mean, I don't know what, just looking at my notes don't even agree with you because I wrote this movie rocks.
Zach's like, I wrote a fucking 40-page chapter about that scene.
Rocks.
Yeah, so Dennis Quaid brings the president into the dream, mm-hmm. or he gets into his dream. Mm-hmm. They kicked Snake Man's ass. Mm-hmm. Well, Tommy
turns into Snake Man. I remember that
because he saw that drawing and he's like, I know what you're scared of.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then. When Dennis Quaid turns into the father that Tommy murdered.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I wrote, glow up. He glows up into the dead father.
I wrote damn.
Okay.
D-A-Y-U-M.
I was so burnt out by the music at that point.
Oh, my God. The fucking music.
But listen. That was cool. That part was cool.
Yeah. And then the president
you get one.
And just fucking...
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. The president of the United States murdered someone. I don't care, like, what situation you're in. That's some touchy subject.
Okay, but guess what? He murdered a lot of people with the nukes. What's one more?
That's a good point.
But I don't think he nuked anybody. I think
that was just
he was having those nightmares, and he was going to
not nuke them.
Stop the he was going to like make peace and say we're not going to have nukes anymore.
Okay.
Because he was seeing all these visions of like what would happen if you nuked and all this stuff.
That's why Cronenberg didn't direct it. He's like, I only like presidents who want to nuke.
Right.
And then he said,
but how crazy is that? Because
Dead Zone,
it has a whole presidential thing about nuking and all that stuff. And fucking the Dead Zone, Cronenberg, it would have been perfect. Would have been perfect.
So what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of a different movie. I got things all jumbled in my head. I'm sorry. When he says he's the one that pushed the button.
That's Dead Zone.
That's Dead Zone. Yeah. Martin Sheen.
Yeah. Well, now, never mind.
This is kind of, I'm sorry. I know we're kind of going off topic, but I was like, going to say.
Wait, Casey was watching Dreamscape and then like somebody just like put Dumb and Dumber on another TV with wheels. And no, they just like wheeled out the Dreamscape TV and put in the Dumb and Dumber TV.
Dumb and Dumber is always playing in here. Always.
Casey's okay. Like, I'm just upset at the scene when Dennis Quaid has to sell the doggy van to get a little moped.
The Mutt Cuts van. Yeah.
When they get to Aspen, it really kicks off.
Yeah, it does.
No, I thought the movie was going to be about, I mean, I knew it was about the president because I think it was in like the synopsis, but I thought it was going to be where they're doing like these like psychic experiments with like entering dreams. And we were going to find out that this whole like experiment process was being sabotaged by the evil dream person, which is Tommy, and that he was taking shape as like different monsters to like terrorize people. But because the scientists can't see the dreams, they just see like how the brain activity is. I thought that was going to be a thing. And then Dennis Quaid's character goes in, realizes this, and they do so, and it becomes sort of like this like dream battle, which I guess it is at the end, but I just thought the story was so different.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like, I thought he was always the snake man. I thought he was like your worst fear kind of thing, but obviously that was we did skip over one little scene. And my only note is LOL at the chase scene on the horse track.
Oh,
we're like, he's on the bike.
Yeah.
They're driving after him. I don't know why. I was like, okay, I love a callback. You know, they're calling back to the opening, you know, scene of the tracks. Yeah. But there's just something about it that it reminded me of in Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, yes.
Ken Marino's being chased and he's like reaching out for him. And he's like 2 feet in front of him. And then he like goes off the jump. I don't know. It was great. Like, the movie wasn't boring at all. Like, it kept my attention. I was never like, oh my God, I can't believe there's another hour left. It was never like that. It was like, oh, it's moving. But it was just moments like that were kind of funny.
Yeah. Okay. So the president has saved the day.
Yep. Through murder.
Through murder. And then we get that last dream sequence, which I made a note about the lens vignette around the edges of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's an interesting choice for a shot. But then when he fucking like comes out as a snake in the elevator, I was like, oh, shit.
I enjoyed that. But I wanted more of that.
Now I get it. That they did that on purpose to like signal a dream slightly.
The dream.
Casey, what are you laughing at?
I just looked at my notes and I saw... I wrote down that they crashed into the phone booth because there is also a phone booth in Dumb and Dumber.
Wow. Someone did switch out your TVs.
I'm sorry.
Now it's time for a little segment that I like to call The Real Monster.
Run, run, run as fast as you can. I'm the gingerbread man.
You're a monster.
I'm not the monster here. You are. You and the rest of that fairy tale trash poisoning my perfect world. Now tell me, where are the others?
Eat me.
Okay, so Bob Blair, Tommy Ray, and the Snake Man can all stake their claim as the monster of Dreamscape. But in a movie this wild, who do you guys think is the real monster?
Denny. Denny with the dream rape.
Denny with the dream rape. Okay.
I like that you, Zach, I like that you looked at me because you, again, did not know who Denny was.
But we didn't even touch on the first time that he was being like a little gross. And so I have the real monster. I have Alex not only kissing Jane without her consent, but the fact that he's kissing a coworker, it's just like
everything he's doing is wrong. She told him, I don't want to be doing that.
Yeah, please don't do that. Together. Yep. It's like, she's like, I do kind of have feelings for you. I could totally see it going there, but I do not want to do that. And he's like, I'm going to jump on it anyways. I'm going to take advantage. Well, you know
what? I'm going to catch you in your dreams, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's the creepy kiss, sneaking into her dream.
Wait, but it was okay because he was able to do it without the machine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right? He's like, did you notice?
Did you notice?
Kate Capshaw. It was organic.
It was. Jeez. How impressive.
Aren't you just impressed that it kind of like counters it? Jeez.
Yeah.
This is more on you, actually.
Yeah.
I've got a few for the real monster, and they all happen fairly early. Okay.
Okay.
We'll start with number three and work up to number one. In third place for my real monster, I have Dennis Quaid's sax playing. Not Tommy Ray's sax playing, because he clearly knew he couldn't play and he was just doing it.
But Zach, the movie wouldn't have been the same if he didn't have that, you know, important plot element of playing the sax.
Right, like very smooth jazz. Number two, silver medal for real monster, is Maggie on his answering machine.
Oh yeah, what was that all about?
Oh yeah, did she break up with him?
Yeah,
but and then wanted him again.
Yeah,
and then she called him back and wanted him. Yeah,
women.
So that makes so later when he's talking to Kate Capshaw, and she's like, "Well, I don't want to be another, you know, like, you know, woman on
one of your conquests."
And I'm like, "Oh, like, okay, kind of a weird sub." Character plot kind of thing, but all right, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, does she know anything about him?
No, that's the thing.
How do you know he just sleeps with women?
Well, like, unless
listening to my voice messages,
unless they've been like doing research on him, which would make sense,
or bugging
because they like
shut up, Zach. Shut up.
What? Okay, so I will shut up, but not until I do my gold medal, first place, real monster of Dreamscape is Dennis Quaid's purse.
Wait, I didn't notice he had a purse.
In the opening scene when he's at the track and he's like running away and he's got this big bag. It's just very much like a purse.
Wait, then I will second that and I'll add to that and say one of the monsters is when the guy who is chasing him... It's not even that funny. I was just imagining the moment like on set, like as they're like shooting it, where if you were to reach into the bag and realize that there's only toilet paper in there, you would just pull out the toilet paper.
Oh, that's
right. The director was like, pull it out like you're a magician. Let's show the audience that he wasn't skimping on toilet paper. This is the real deal.
I remember.
Unnatural.
And then he's like magically in a cab driving right by them.
He's like, bye. He's like,
so he is a magician.
Scene.
Yeah. It's like Pee Wee in Big Adventure when he's pulling the chain out of his bike.
I actually do have another a real monster, and it's the villains when they're trying to kill Alex when he's in the phone booth. Because the whole you would assume that it's supposed to be like, you know, it's like they're government, you know, people, so it's like we need to make this, you know, his death seem like an accident or seem, you know, like very inconspicuous. Let's drive our car into the phone booth and like hope he doesn't escape since we're coming at him from like 50 feet away, giving him plenty of time. I don't know, it's like what was the cleanup procedure after that? It's like, ah, oh, shit. Just like guts everywhere. People watching in the public.
And it was weird because it was just like a phone booth in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And yeah. I guess that might have been a thing.
There? Just like in Dumb and Dumber.
That might have been a thing like back in the 80s where it's like, you know, the big parking lot and they had phone booths. But
yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
Why didn't he have a cell phone? Right. Hello, jeez. Convenience. Jeez.
Okay, so one thing we didn't talk about that I just want to mention really quick before we wrap this up, the ending. Who did the ending better, Dreamscape or Inception?
Inception.
Fuck.
I mean, I'm going to have to say Inception because I hated this movie.
The Dreamscape ending confused me because, well, one thing is it took me a second to remember that the ticket guy was the guy from her dream.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, got it.
Mm-hmm. I wrote ticket guy is from somewhere else, but I couldn't remember where.
Yeah. And then I was like, well, did she just dream of him because she'd been on that train? But, and then I didn't understand what they were trying to imply. Was he doing another like sneaky dream thing with her?
He was going to dream rape her again.
God. So I thought there was going to be a twist. And there were a few moments in the movie where I thought they were going to be like, aha, you're actually dreaming now. Did you know that? Like when they first bring him to the facility and he's like, I'm not doing this. And they're like, go. He's even said something. He's like, they kept saying like sleep. They were like, sleep it off, sleep on it.
Sleep on it. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, so the next scene, he's going to be dreaming and he's going to like see it. And then they're going to be like, well, actually we're sleeping this whole time. Because even in that moment, when he first sees them doing the whole setup of like people like wired in to the dreams, he walks into the room, which mm-hmm. just felt very like, I don't know. He seemed foreign.
He just walks in.
Yeah. And then Max von Sydow even kind of like looks at him like, oh, you're here. Okay. Yeah. Like, I don't know. There was just something off. And I thought eventually he was going to be like, Dennis Quaid, like you're dreaming. And that never happened. So. My vote goes to Inception. Fuck. Long story short.
You guys have no taste.
No, I know.
No, real talk. I enjoyed Inception a lot.
I also love your passion for this movie. I like that we don't always agree on everything. I think it makes for a fun discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that is all the time we have for Dreamscape.
It was way too much time.
Casey, it was almost a pleasure to have you on to talk about all things horror.
If you're enjoying How I Met Your Monster, we would love your help getting the word out. Subscribe to the show for free on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, share and engage with social media posts, and rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. All of this helps bring a larger audience to the show so we can introduce more people to more monsters. A quick link to do all this is ratethispodcast.com/monster. Thank you so much, and now back to the show.
All right. Are you guys, do you have anything else to say?
A quick word to the listener. You don't have to watch this movie. And please remember that we did this so that you don't have to.
Damn.
If you could put some like solemn music behind that.
I mean, we have that Medium article that is ever evolving very slowly lately over the past summer that Jimmy Tickey and I wrote about our horror movie marathoning during COVID. We just finished the Alien franchise and we are now embarking on the Predator franchise so that we can then embark on the AVP franchise and then leave that whole.
So real quick, tell me your thoughts on just like in like one or two sentences. What are your thoughts on Alien Resurrection?
Love it.
Okay, so thank you.
when I went into rewatching it, because I hadn't seen it since it came out.
Dan, I said 1 to 2 sentences.
These are run-on sentences. And then when I thought that I saw the movie, and then my thoughts of it are...
No good.
No, I thought I was going to kind of like hate it a little bit. That is a good movie.
It's a
actually
lot of fun.
We did our little ranking, and if you go on the Medium article, you'll see that it is number 3. And only because I love 1 and 2 so much, it's hard to like, mm-hmm. I just couldn't justify putting them at any lower. But like, if I were to sit down and rewatch one right now, I mean, it could be Aliens because that's fun, but mm-hmm. Alien Resurrection fucking moves along, and it is so much fun and also very clever. Like how they got Sigourney back and all that, and the aliens. I think the aliens are my favorite in Part 4, and that's it.
Okay.
Sorry for that extended
1 to 2 sentence. Paragraphs.
Yeah. That's my thesis.
What are you guys working on? Danny, do you have anything going on?
It's funny you should ask. I'm actually in the process of trying to find literary manager as a screenwriter to, you know, help get some of these scripts sold and kind of kickstart my career as a screenwriter in a more kind of like, I guess, professional capacity. You can actually read 2 of my scripts that are on both the Blacklist and Coverfly. If you search my name, Danny Salem, Salemme, that's 2 M's like the candy, you can read them for yourselves. I think on Coverfly, you have to request it, but on the Blacklist, you can just download it.
Okay. I will tell all of our listeners out there that 2 of Danny's scripts that he's mentioning, Killing the Live and Cottonmouth, are fucking awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Killing the Live is something that Danny's been working on since I met him in college. Danny has written an incredible adaptation of our short film Cottonmouth. He's transformed that into a feature-length screenplay that will just blow you away.
I am really proud of them. I'm excited to see.
And you should be. They're really good.
Thank you.
So if anyone out there is a literary manager or knows a literary manager, send them our way because Danny's looking. You can find Danny on social media at Danny Salem. Mm-hmm. You can find Casey at Wolf Mother Casey. And you can find me at Zach Winsick. Also, check out our website, howimetyourmonster.com, where you can listen to the show, sign up for our newsletter to stay current with upcoming episodes, and subscribe so that you never miss a moment of the fun. You can send me an email with questions, recommendations, guest spots, and more at zach@howimetyourmonster.com. And as always, you can find this information in the show notes. I'd like to welcome all of our new listeners to the show, and we appreciate all of you for taking the time out of your week to listen to us ramble about horror movies and monsters. Because it's our favorite thing to do.
It's my favorite thing to do every day.
And now go meet some monsters.